Listeners, you are listening to Radio Metromail. Professor Muhammad Yunus doesn't need any introduction. He was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for his revolutionary work in establishing the Grameen movement. This movement, based on microfinance for the rural poor, combines capitalism and social responsibility and has transformed the lives of millions across the world. On February 3rd at the University of Toronto, Professor Muhammad Yunus shared his Bangladeshi experience and spoke about the unequal accumulation of global wealth, the concept of zero poverty, zero unemployment, social business, and the system that needs to be fixed in the capitalistic society. His inspiring lecture is now on air on Radio Metromail. Let's have a listen. Thank you.
Delighted to be here again, back again in this campus. I have been an alumnus of the university because I received an honorary doctorate long years back. So it's good to reconnect with your campus that I have been with it for a long time. Peter mentioned I'm on a war tour, since like I'm everywhere. Actually, I came to Canada, on the way back I'm going to South Korea, that's about it. But it's around the world, that's true. That makes it around the world tour. This time it's about the book, which Peter mentioned, The World of Three Zeros. Zero poverty, zero unemployment, zero net carbon emissions. Those ideas have been developing and discussing about those things for many years because of the work that I've been doing in Bangladesh. One, many of you are familiar with, it's called microcredit. Small loans, poor people, particularly poor women. We started it back in 1976, about 41 years back, and became spread out around the world. We do it in Bangladesh, we do it out other places. Many people around the world have introduced that in their own work, both in the poor countries, also rich countries, developed countries, in all circumstances. So my attention was on the poor people and see how that can be helped. They can be helped to get out of poverty. Naturally, people ask me the question, why poverty? What is the reason people become poor and remain poor? And to my experience, I try to understand and give a response to that question in the way I felt. And I came with the response and I check it out again and again whether I'm doing the right thing saying that. And I reconfirmed it, yes, that's what the root cause of poverty. One way I try to explain it, that poverty is not created by poor people. So it's not coming from them. Then where is it coming from? Poverty is created by the system that we have created. That causes the poverty. If that is this explanation is acceptable, then something comes as a policy. In order to overcome poverty, in order to eliminate poverty, we have to fix the system. Because the seed of poverty is in the system. If we somehow can pick up those seeds of poverty from the system, nobody will be a poor person. There's nothing wrong with poor people. I try to give an image to what I'm saying by analogy. I say it's like a bonsai tree. You take the seed of the tallest tree in the forest and then put the seed in the flower pot to grow. And the seed will grow, it will germinate. And you'll have a tree coming out of it. But it will stop after a while. It will not grow beyond 2 feet or 3 feet or 3.5 feet, something like that. To be beautiful replica of the tree that we saw originally in the forest. But not as tall as the one that we saw. Not as giant of a tree as we saw. They look so cute, we call them bonsai. And we keep them in our living room, in the favorite place. You ask the question, why this tree didn't grow as tall as that one? The answer is very clear. Because we didn't give this soil base on which seed could grow into a big tall tree. It's not the fault of the seed. Seed was a good seed. So I try to explain by saying, poor people are bonsai people. There's nothing wrong with their seed. They're as good as anybody else. Simply society never gave them the space, never gave them the environment, so that they can grow as tall as everybody else. And that's the root cause of all the problems that we see, the poverty. So if that is so, what is it wrong in the system? What went wrong in the system? Which part particularly you paid attention to? One, that I paid attention to our own necessities, not because, you know, I hope it will stick around for a while. Because I was struggling with that one, is the financial system. We built a huge, intricate financial system in the world. But amazing thing, almost half the population of the entire world are left out of it. It's the bottom half of the population. If you have 8 billion people on this planet, you can draw a line in the middle, you can easily say, these people are not connected with the financial system. And finance plays a very important role in people's life. When you disconnect them from the financial system or never extended the financial system to them, they're in big trouble. I try to explain it by saying, finance is like economic oxygen for people. If we don't have oxygen in this room, we'll be gasping, we cannot breathe, and then we'll collapse. We cannot function anymore. If you deny the economic oxygen to people, they economically feel the same way. They remain dysfunctional. They collapse. And that's what we call poverty. They cannot function. If you connect them with the economic oxygen, they become alive, active. They can participate in the economy because they bring their creative power to address the issues that they have confront. So vital is the thing called financial services. But we have not paid attention to it. We accidentally, not that this was my PhD dissertation or something that I have put, nothing like that. It was not my research topic or anything. Accidentally, I got involved with it. I had no reason to get involved with it. But circumstances in Bangladesh were so desperate back in the middle of the 70s. I somehow, out of desperation, got involved with it. The simple thing that I did, I was frustrated like everybody else in the country, with desperate situation, famine in the country and so on. I was trying to see in the village next door to the university campus if I could give some use to somebody. Because the subject that I teach to my class, I get a feeling that it's a useless subject. It's called economics. it has no meaning in the life of the people that live in Ecuador. And here I am explaining all those beautiful, elegant theories. And I felt I'm doing something terrible. The things cannot help me to address the issues that are outside the door. I'm enthusiastically getting it on to pass it on to the young people. So I'm not doing justice to myself. I felt I'm a useless person. So I was trying to find some use for me. So one idea that why don't I go to the village next door and see I can make myself useful to at least one person. I cannot be useful to many persons. That ability, that quality I don't have. But as a human being, I can be of some assistance somehow to somebody. So that was a simple idea. And out of that came many little things in the village. But I learned a lot from the village in return. One of the things I learned terrified me, the loan sharking in the village. You read about loan sharking in stories, in plays, and you watch it in movies, how terrible it is. How cruel a human being can be to another human being. Just by lending tiny little money, you care everything the other person has. So lending is just a pretext. It is no business relationship at all. It's a gambling mechanism. And funny thing, when I see this, I feel terrible, but I can't do anything. It goes on right in front of my eyes. And I get very angry with my subject again, economics. Economics never taught me what to do with the loan sharks. In all my studies, I never had one paragraph about loan sharks. And this is the real right in front of me. Again, I felt I'm a useless person. I learned things which has no use for me. So I was fuming inside of me, not knowing what to do, because I don't know. So one sudden thought that came to my mind, why don't I lend the money myself? If I lend the money, people will come to me. They don't have to go to loan shark. Problems for them will be solved. They will not be able to. They will not be victims of the loan sharks. I could protect them. I immediately went into it. I didn't write a big research proposal to undertake it for the next 3 years to study loan sharking in one village in Bangladesh. None of this. I just wanted to get things done right away. And this, I thought, just fits me right. Just started giving money out of my pocket. And people loved it. And tried to do things in a systematic way so that I can keep track of them. Now they've become popular, more and more people coming from other villages and so on. After a couple of years, I thought, this cannot go on like this. Why don't I create a bank to continue this? That's the first idea came, that I should create a bank. Then question came, what kind of bank? I immediately dismissed the banks that exist in front of me. I said, not that kind of bank. Again, it will go the same way. I wanted to create the bank the way I work. Already I've been working. Protect and promote that bank. But with the existing law, I cannot do that. Existing law became the barrier for me. So my campaign, my lobbying began to create a new law, to create a bank for the poor people. Everybody rejected it, everybody laughed at it. What is a bank for the poor people? It doesn't make sense. They're so contradictory to each other, bank and poor people. I said, no, they need the bank. So finally, in 1983, we got the permission and became a bank. Named Grameen Bank or Village Bank. Started in 76. By 93, we became a bank. I was so happy. Now I can do it as much as I want. And enthusiastically, we kept on expanding. What special privilege that I got by creating a new law? I got enormous flexibility to avoid what the conventional banks do. I try to explain to my colleagues and whoever trying to understand what I do and how I do. People tell me, how did you decide on each rule and procedure that you put into your bank? Did you do a lot of research on that? I said, no, research is not my kind of thing. I just go and do things and try it out. If you call that a research, maybe that's research. Otherwise, it's not the convention of thing. So I make my life simple. I like simple things. Whenever I need a rule or a procedure, I just look at the conventional banks, how they do it. Once I learn how they do it, I just do the opposite. Literally, if you look at Grameen Bank, examine each piece of it, just opposite of what conventional banks do. They go to the rich, we go to the poor, obviously. They want to work in the city center. They work only in the cities. They never work in the village. So I transferred. I said, we go to the remote village. Today, Grameen Bank in Bangladesh has 2,600 branches all over the country. None of the branch is in any city, any town in Bangladesh. All in the rural areas. Even today, after 41 years. And they continue like that. That's how seriously we took it. In order to do banking with a conventional bank, you have to come to their office. Explain to them what you want. And explain to them how good you are in your business. So that they get confidence in you to talk to you. We do the reverse. We made a basic principle right from day one. People should not come to the bank. Bank should go to people. And we have been following that principle ever since. Today we have over 9 million borrowers of Grameen Bank spread over all over the country. We from Grameen Bank go and meet all these 9 million borrowers in 80,000 villages, do the business at their doorstep, even today. They never miss. Wherever the Grameen idea went, they follow the same thing. We dismiss the whole idea of collateral from banking. And we create the banking without any legal papers, without any documentation from the legal side. So I said, Grameen Bank is the only bank in the world which is lawyer-free. There is no lawyer in our bank. But still it works. People get shocked. Are you sure it will work tomorrow? I said, it has been working for 41 years. And I have no reason why not to believe that it will work tomorrow. Last year we lent out over $2.5 billion. No papers. Our banker friends get very scared. Are you sure this money will come back? I said, it's all discussed. So this is the way we continued. This is the conventional banking that we are talking about, conventional finances. Then I raised the question of the economic theory, where it misinterprets human being. That's another cause of poverty. It interprets human being in a very funny way. It interprets human being as someone who is driven by self-interest. That's the core of economics, self-interest. Meaning selfishness. And is human being driven only by selfishness? I said, I don't agree at all. Real human being is so different. Human being is driven by selfishness and selflessness together. But selflessness has been removed from the economic theory. So it created a world of greed, selfishness. Nobody has any time to pay attention to problems of other people. That led to the institutions and everything becoming self-centered, created poverty and all other problems. So this is one. Then we I tried to include selflessness into economic theory. I said, in order to include it, we have to create a new kind of business. Selfishness creates profit-maximizing business. What kind of business we should be if it is a selfless business? It's a business to solve problems rather than make money. So we started creating a lot of those companies which are devoted in solving people's problems rather than make money for themselves. And we gave it a name, we call them social business. Non-dividend company to solve human problems. Now it's growing. We have done it in Bangladesh. We have been doing it in Bangladesh for many years. Now it's being a popular subject in many countries. Many big companies coming forward to do social business. We have joint ventures with big companies to do social business. Another way. I said, look, it's a natural thing. It's not forcing by, it's not a force by the government that you have to do. It's a natural thing. It's in your heart. It's in yourself. You want to do it, you do it. You want to bring clean water in the village so that people have safe drinking water. And you create a business to sell water, not to make money from them, but to make sure it is a sustainable business. You can cover the cost. Make it as cheap as possible, as clean as possible, so that it's safe water. But it's affordable to everybody. That's not a rocket science. Anybody can do that. We can take 5 unemployed young people out of unemployment by creating a business. Not to make money, but to solve the problem of 5 unemployed people. If I know how to solve the problem of 5 unemployed people, I found the formula to solve the problem of unemployed people anywhere. Millions of them. You just repeat the same problem because you know how to do that. So people bring their creative power, that's all. The last point that I will mention before I conclude, capitalist system, the theory that we have, made a mistake about human being on another thing. They created a system where everybody has to go and work for somebody else. Job is the central thing in the entire theory. If you have no job, the whole economy collapses. I said, why do people have to work for somebody else? Is this what human beings are born for? And my answer is no. Human beings are made into job seekers as an artificial way. Theory made them do that. Natural human being is not someone who is looking for a job. Natural human being is a go-getter. That's what our history, the past history of human being. When we are living in the cave, we are not sending job applications to anybody. You figured out, when did the job application come in human history? Not too far now. Very recent. So, entrepreneurship is in our blood. But we discarded that. That is the essence of human being. I said, if we now put into the theory that all human beings are entrepreneurs, entire system changes. And then people are moving. No, that's not right. Not everybody can be entrepreneur. Natural thing is to take a job. I said, what made you think so? That not everybody is entrepreneur. I think everybody is interested. So your thinking versus my thinking. How do you resolve it? I said, I can resolve it from my side. I've been lending money to poor women in Bangladesh, now it's spread all over the world. Now hundreds of millions of microwave recipient all over the world. What do they do with microwave? Do they send the job application with microwave? No. They start a business. So if 9 million borrowers in Grameen Bank alone, forget about many other organizations in Bangladesh, who do the same thing, can convert themselves into entrepreneurs just because they got money. Illiterate rural women, turning themselves as entrepreneurs. It's not a selective process. We lend money to any woman who is a poor person. We don't say, are you an entrepreneur? We never ask that. We didn't have a test whether she has the entrepreneur. Simply she said, I want to take this money, I want to start this business. Here's the money. So, irrespective of where she is from, what background she is from, if an illiterate woman can become an entrepreneur, I said, nobody can convince me otherwise. All human beings are entrepreneurs. The moment we include that entrepreneurship into our theory, entire theory changes. We have no problem of this, poverty and so on. So this is an issue that I have been raising, and that led me to other issues, a massive issue of wealth concentration. All the wealth now is concentrated in few hands. 1% of the entire population, 1%, own more wealth or more than 99% of the entire wealth of the world. 8 people, which has been announced, 8 people own more wealth than the bottom 50% of the population. And it gets worse every year. That's what the capitalist system is all about. All the wealth is pushed upwards. So it becomes a big mushroom of wealth, expanding mushroom of wealth, owned by fewer and fewer people, a handful of people. The stem of the mushroom is the wealth owned by 99.9% of the population. Then we say this is a grand economic structure. It is not. It is a mockery of economic system. We're simply going through it. It's a basically an explosive situation. It's a ticking time bomb. When it continues, it gets worse. When 1% will own all the wealth of the world, very little will be left for the rest of the people. People will not take it easy. It will express in political ways, in economic ways, in social ways, the law of anger in the system, which makes the system collapse. So that's the danger that I keep thinking. I said, the only way up is to go back, revisit the entire structure economic theory and redesign it so that wealth doesn't go all the way up. Wealth comes down, shared by everybody else. And how it can be done? Human capability. This is the thinking process that created the theory. Another thinking process will create the counter theory to make it do other way around. And I suggested some of those issues in the book. Thank you very much.